You are Locked On Bills, your daily Buffalo Bills podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, Bills Mafia? It's Joe Marino from the Draft Network, and I'm your host of Locked On Bills. Happy Tuesday to you. Has it sunk in yet? The Buffalo Bills are one win away from the AFC Championship game. Since the last time we spoke, we found out that the Buffalo Bills are going to host the Baltimore Ravens Saturday night, 8:15 p.m. on NBC. Tomorrow will be the comprehensive primer. We're going to talk about that football team that presents a lot of challenges to the Buffalo Bills. And so I'll give you all the thoughts I have about the Ravens and the challenges that they present for the Bills on tomorrow's podcast. So make sure that you don't miss it. Hit that subscribe button. Today is Herd Mentality. It's your show. It's when you take control of the discussion. Full disclosure here off the top, I'm not able to get to everyone this week. So I got it down to, I think, what the most common submissions were and kind of lumped some stuff together, paraphrased a few things. I want to try to be more efficient with our Herd Mentality podcast. And this week, as I shared with you at the end of the Sunday/Monday podcast, is a crazy one for me. I'm actually closing on the sale of my house today, Tuesday. I'm closing on the sale of my new house on Wednesday, and I'm moving on Thursday. And of course, all of that with packing and trying to do my job. My wife's got to do her own job. We've got an 11-month-old baby in the house. So things are crazy. And so I needed to have this, a little bit more of a condensed Herd Mentality this week. So if I didn't get to your item, I am asking for grace today, as it's a busy week here. So let's get this thing started. First one comes from Nick. Nick says, my biggest question going into this week is, do you think bad weather will really play to our advantage? If it does snow, Stephon Diggs and Cole Beasley are dome guys, and Josh hasn't had those crazy numbers in games with bad weather. Whereas Lamar, in college, the last time he played in snow, had 5 and 7 touchdowns in those games, respectively. I think that the snow is an advantage for Baltimore. I do. Obviously, that's a team that runs the ball very well. They run the ball in a variety of different ways. Their passing game is below average. Obviously, elements and precipitation, that favors Baltimore, where the Bills are very much a spread offense that likes to throw the football all over the yard and does not have a very good rushing attack. So yeah, the snow or any type of precipitation is going to favor Baltimore in this football game. With that said, it's not like Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott just woke up and found out that they play home games in Buffalo, New York, and it's cold outside. And if they have good seasons like they do this year, that means that they're hosting multiple playoff games and that they have to have a team that can play in the cold and in the snow. That's a product of where this team plays. And as meticulous as these men are, this had to be a thought in the way they constructed this football team. If not, it was a huge miscalculation. I love the way the Bills play football, especially on offense. I absolutely love it. But there has to be some plan or idea for this offense being able to work in the snow. It's not like we've all been thinking about this all year and Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean are just finding out that this is something that they're going to have to deal with. So let's see what happens. Let's see what they got. Again, this has to be something that's been on their mind all year long. I will say one other thing about the snow. As much as it seems like it's an advantage for Baltimore, that snow is going to slow down Lamar Jackson. And he's the X factor. He's the guy that has all the speed and juice and wiggle in the world that can corner your defense with outside runs and can run away from guys and break pursuit angles. So that's definitely something that's a disadvantage for him. Now, I know what you're probably thinking. Well, yeah, well, the Bills on defense, they still have to get their footing as well. But I think it winds up being a more straight-ahead game as opposed to a horizontal game, which I think benefits the Bills. So if there's a silver lining there as we speculate what this game's going to look like and we have some concern that there could be some precipitation, let's just keep all of that in mind. Next one today comes from Baz, who says, looking forward to the Ravens game and their strong running attack. Do you see Buffalo playing more traditional 4-3 with A.J. Klein instead of Taron Johnson? I worry about Klein covering their tight ends and attempting to tackle Lamar Jackson in space. Although Johnson might not hold up as well versus their running game, he might be better versus Jackson in space and way better in coverage. It's interesting. You know, if they're going to go 12 personnel, maybe some 13 personnel, some 22 personnel, you're more inclined to keep your base defense on the field, and that would include A.J. Klein. Now, I think there could be some game plan specific things for this game where when you say base defense, it doesn't mean exactly that. You could have some situations where you like A.J. Klein more in the middle and you're willing to play Milano and Edmonds more as your outside backers because you trust their range more. So I do think you'll see more base than typical from the Buffalo Bills, but I don't think that necessarily means that one of your outside linebackers is going to be A.J. Klein. I think they can get creative with that and scheme it up appropriately so that they're not putting their defenders in bad situations and in matchups that they can't handle. So I think you're going to see a lot of different looks. I think you're going to see some unique usage of personnel for specific roles against certain personnel groupings. And, you know, I think you have to really be happy that you have Sean McDermott and you have Leslie Frazier, who have game planned wonderfully over the last several years, including Baltimore last year, including against Kyler Murray this year. So I feel like they have a good pulse on what's needed to be done. And I think that the script for Baltimore just will look a little bit different than saying base defense and, you know, potentially being mismatches based on what that means. Tim says, I'm a lifelong Bills fan since the Joe Ferguson days. Been listening since the Houston playoff aftermath, and you make me feel like a smarter and more engaged fan. What's your short-term and long-term take on the Zach Moss situation? For this year's playoffs, is Antonio Williams a better complement to Singletary than the infinitely tackleable TJ Yeldon? For next year, if we want competition for Moss, what attributes of a running back would you look for? Do you see any good fits in free agency or a day two draft pick? So for this year, and I got a lot of questions about the running back situation, so everybody that sent them in, this is where we're going to kind of talk about that, as well as the next question. We'll get into a little bit of a different angle. For this year, I think that the Bills are going to wind up putting Zach Moss on injured reserve. That creates an open space. Antonio Williams will be elevated to the active roster. I don't anticipate Antonio Williams being active on game day. I think that you're going to see TJ Yeldon as RB2. You're going to see Devin Singletary as RB1. And that's been the case whenever the Bills' other running back, whether it was Devin Singletary last year or it was Zach Moss this year, the answer has been TJ Yeldon. And so I think we kind of know, based on the way McDermott's handled this over the last 2 years, that TJ Yeldon's going to step into this role. So I think that's number one. I do think Antonio Williams will be on the active roster, and but I don't think he'll be active on game day. So when it comes to the long-term forecast here with this Bills running back situation, you know that I'm pretty underwhelmed with Devin Singletary and Zach Moss. And I think an underrated part of what they do is what they bring in pass protection, where I think they've both been very good. So I want to make sure we keep that at the forefront here, because I think that's an important piece of what Singletary and Moss contribute to this team. But this Bills offense has a speed deficiency at running back, and I think it significantly impacts the types of runs that they can execute, because they just don't have enough foot fire to get through gaps and also push the ball off tackle. So if you continue with this Singletary Moss thing, I think you're going to get more of the same of what you've had here. If you want to kind of change the dynamic here, I think that starts with bringing in a running back that has a little bit more of a dynamic athletic profile, a guy with some wiggle and some speed and some foot fire. So that's what I would be interested in doing if I were the Bills. And, you know, you start to think about how do you make this offense better? And it's very good. It scored 501 points this year, the number one scoring offense in the AFC. But the low-hanging fruit to me, when you talk about how this Bills offense gets better, it's by having a more dynamic running back situation. I think Singletary and Moss, I think one of them can be an answer for you. One of them could be the complimentary back. But what they need is somebody with some athletic ability. And so whether that's Michael Carter from North Carolina in the draft, Javonte Williams from North Carolina is very good. You look at a guy like a Travis Etienne from Clemson. I mean, there's going to be backs that you can get that bring an athletic profile to the table that would boost the athleticism in your backfield. So that's what I would be interested in next year. And again, if we're going to talk about how to make a really good offense even better, you got to get some more dynamic playmakers in the backfield. That doesn't mean paying Aaron Jones. That doesn't mean paying Chris Carson. You know, I'm not for that. Those guys are free agents. What that means is investing a day two or mid-round pick on a running back that has some foot fire. Next one comes from Matt, who says, I have a question for Herd Mentality. It's about your comment about maybe going and getting a day two running back. I feel like Zach Moss deserves some more time to evolve. I feel like he could be a solid RB2 for the Bills. But with that being said, I also feel like if there is a good early second round running back, then they should go for him. Do you have any running backs in mind? And do we trade back? Do we trade up? How do we get that early pick? And a quick comment, Avery Williams at Boise State is an explosive return man, and I would like to see him convert to wide receiver and be the next Cole Beasley. So when it comes to Zach Moss and giving him more time to develop, the guy entered the NFL with 778 carries in college. I mean, this is a guy who's played a good bit of football. Stylistically, he is who he is. He's a downhill back. He's good in pass pro. He catches the football. And he's a guy that's really a between the tackles banger. Those are a dime a dozen. I mean, I think his biggest value to the team is probably what he brings in pass protection. Now, I give him the benefit of the doubt for some things. He's a rookie. He had an injury early in the season that limited him. He missed some time. It was a weird offseason. He didn't have a chance to fully acclimate to the team. And he stepped in and played a pretty prominent role. But at the end of the day, Zach Moss or Devin Singletary are fine, but together there's just not enough differentiation in their skill sets for my liking. I want a more complete backfield. Just like you have your wide receiver room. You have your John Brown, Stephon Diggs, Cole Beasley. Then you have a Gabriel Davis. You have an Isaiah McKenzie. All these different skill sets working together to give you a really dynamic and difficult to defend group of wide receivers. Give me the same thing in the running back room. Are we ready for some football? The NFL playoffs are in full swing, and there is only one place that has you covered and one place that we trust, and that is betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. Maybe you want to put some cash down on the Bills this weekend, or you like another team's chances. BetOnline.ag has the best lines in the business, and they have so many fun prop bets that you can explore as well. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. And don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Next one comes from Brian, who says, Cole Beasley said that the Colts were the best defense we faced all year. Do you agree with that? What do you think made him say that? Because they faced Pittsburgh, San Francisco, and the Rams this year, and they all seem to have better defenses, at least on paper. So you mentioned the Rams, Steelers, 49ers. I think those defenses would definitely be in the discussion. I think the Rams starting after the Bills game really kind of kicked things into high gear. So Cole Beasley, when he played the Rams defense, I think it's different than what that unit became. I'll say this about Indy. And I don't think that they have the most talent-rich defense, but I am really impressed with their defensive coordinator, Matt Eberflus, and what he's been able to get out of his personnel. You think about TJ Carey, Xavier Rhodes, Denico Autry. All three of those players have been underwhelming players in their careers, right? TJ Carey and Denico Autry in specific, they have been below average players. They come to Indy and they're meaningful guys that are having their best year of their career. Xavier Rhodes, everybody thought that dude was cooked in Minnesota, and he's having a great year. Darius Leonard was a very raw, small school linebacker that has turned into a superstar from day one at linebacker. Kenny Moore, not a guy that was on anyone's radar. All of a sudden, he's one of the best slot corners in the league. Their safety tandem of Julian Blackman and Kyrie Willis, a couple of mid-round picks that are immediately starting caliber safeties. And then Grover Stewart was a late-round pick who's winding up being a very meaningful defensive tackle for them. So I think what he's been able to do is get the most out of these players, and they're so well coached. They're fundamentally sound. And it's not that they have all this star power, although they do have two All-Pros in Darius Leonard and DeForest Buckner. It's the entire unit being so cohesive and everyone doing their job that makes it really tough to move the ball against. And so, yeah, I think on paper, Indy's not going to look like the best defense the Bills have faced. But when you talk about the way they play, it's a really, really good group. A fan of the Buffalo Bills says, "I am absolutely infuriated by the number of called Josh Allen runs Dable dialed up. We have arguably the best passing attack in the league right now, and Josh Allen is playing as good as anyone, including Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes. Could you imagine Patrick Mahomes having that many called runs in a game? It's insanity, and not because he's less athletic, but because of his level as a passer. That's what we have. We need to get into that mindset. It's criminal. The opportunity cost of running a Josh Allen run play is not running a Josh Allen pass play. It's a dumb decision every time." All right, so let's dig into this. I also want to add, I had some other complaints about Brian Dable, but it was about him not having anything creative in this game plan with a lot of the jet sweeps and, you know, different passes that he will have or trick plays. And so I want to address both of those things. So the first thing we'll talk about is the Josh Allen run plays. I'll start off by saying this. This was not my favorite game from Brian Dable, all right? I thought he ran the ball too much, but with running backs. I don't have an issue with the quarterback runs. Those are good play calls. Let me tell you why. The Colts gave the Bills light boxes all game long. And when you have a light box, it's a good run look. And it's an even better run look when you could run the ball with your quarterback, because now your quarterback is not just handing the ball off to a running back and his job's done for the play. You're actually playing the game with 11 guys on offense on that run play, and you're introducing extra gaps, and you are increasing that numbers advantage by having the quarterback run the football. So they are smart plays. They are intelligent plays against light boxes like that. And it's even better that the quarterback runs the football in those situations because you have even better numbers. So my criticisms with Brian Dable wasn't the quarterback runs. It was the situations where he decided to run the ball in like second and short. If it's second and short, to me, that's pass the ball twice. Teams get in second and short, and they become so obsessed with getting the first down, and they just get outside of what they do. And I thought Brian Dable, for the most part this year, hasn't done that, but against the Colts, he did. And so that's where my frustration came. Second and two, second and one, pass the ball twice. So that's where I'm at. As far as the creative layers of the game plan missing, remember, we just talked about this is a fundamentally sound defense. Everybody does their 1/11th. But in addition to that, the Colts run almost exclusively zone coverage. They don't really run any man coverage. And when you have zone coverage concepts, that means eyes are in the backfield. And if eyes are in the backfield, your opportunity to get creative and run trick plays and you know, do things with motion to really create spacing advantages and stuff like that. It's not as simple, right? You want man coverage where guys are only focused on their man. They turn their back to the quarterback and to the backfield, and then you can do all this crazy stuff off of it. So I think we have to remember the context here before we get upset that Brian Dable didn't open the bag of tricks against a really good zone-heavy, fundamentally sound, everyone-does-their-job Colts defense. Joseph says it looked like Josh Norman and Levi Wallace were splitting time at CB2. Just wondering why Norman was playing more. Was Wallace dealing with an injury? No, he wasn't. In fact, they've been doing this for the last several games. Wallace and Norman, they've been rotating. And this has kind of been a typical Sean McDermott move that we've seen when he doesn't have a clear starter. Think about in 2017, Ramon Humber and Matt Milano, they rotated at linebacker. Think about Cody Ford and Ty Inseki last year at right tackle. So this year it's Wallace and Norman. So I think it's just one of McDermott's go-to things where he doesn't have the established guy. All right, well, we'll rotate a couple guys that we think are the 1A and 1B at that spot. So Trey White obviously gets all the snaps at one spot. Well, he's not as settled at the other, so he plays them both. And I think that's what we've seen from the Milano and Humber situation as well as the Inseki and Ford situation. Josh says, in regards to the run defense this week, I heard some stats from Joe Biscaglia this morning. Through the first three quarters of the game, the Bills gave up only 60 rushing yards on 21 carries, good for about 2.9 yards per carry. However, in the fourth quarter, they surrendered 93 yards on only 6 carries for 15.5 yards per carry. I haven't rewatched the game, and I'm sure my judgment was clouded by emotion watching live, but it felt like the linebackers struggled to fill lanes late in the game, particularly Edmonds, and there were too many poor and missed tackles. I was wondering if you saw anything in addition to that that may have contributed to their struggles in the fourth quarter. Also, how concerned are you about this run defense containing Baltimore on Sunday? Well, I think everyone's concerned about the Baltimore rushing attack. That's the challenge that they present, right? I'm sure they're concerned about the Bills' passing attack, right? So everyone's got their things that make other teams nervous, and that's just what Baltimore brings to the table. When it comes to the discrepancy between how the Bills defended the run in the first three quarters versus the fourth quarter, I have some thoughts. Number one, I think late in that game, the Bills were probably dialed in to thinking that the Colts were going to be pass heavy. They were down, right? Like they were down 14 and then 11. So I think they were probably thinking a lot about the pass game and maybe were not as dialed into the run. But let's look at the runs that they did have that reached, you know, all these yards, 6 carries for 93 yards. Well, they had a rush for 29, a rush for 20, and a rush for 33. And so when you get three big chunk runs like that in a limited sample size, it's very much going to skew the yards per carry. And we have to keep in mind that of those three big chunk runs, Nyheim Hines had a 29 and he had the 33. Jonathan Taylor had the 20. So Nyheim Hines is this very explosive runner that has a ton of speed. And I think having those complementary skill sets, you hear me? Probably created some very favorable opportunities for Hines. And nothing against Jonathan Taylor, who has wonderful size and speed, but he ain't Nyheim Hines when it comes to burst and explosiveness. So I think that's just an example of what a pair of skill sets that are complementary in the backfield can do for your offense. RockAuto.com is a family business that's been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. You can quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specifications, and prices that you prefer. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why would you spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Make sure you write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. They have amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need over at RockAuto.com. Next one today comes from Randall, who says, 3 out of the 4 AFC playoff teams remaining will feature quarterbacks from the 2018 draft class. Do you think this class could have the potential to go down as the best of all time? Do they have the talent to rival the 83 class of Marino, Kelly, and Elway? In your opinion, is there a better quarterback draft class than that? So no, I don't think there's a better draft class than that from quarterbacks. I think the number 2 is the 2004 draft class that featured Eli Manning, Philip Rivers, and Ben Roethlisberger. It's hard to say right now that, you know, Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson, Sam Darnold, and Josh Allen is going to be, you know, the next Manning, Rivers, Roethlisberger, or Kelly, Elway, and Marino. But you have to love the way that Jackson, Mayfield, and Allen in particular are playing for their teams. And what's fun about considering this 2018 quarterback class is thinking back to each year and which quarterback was the best one after that season. In 2018, it was Baker. In 2019, it was Lamar, and this year it's Josh. So I think next year will be fun, right, to see who gets the nod in year four of these quarterbacks' careers. But it looks good so far. You know, they all have won a playoff game now. And, you know, in addition to Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson, you know, the AFC is in really good shape when it comes to quarterbacks, not to mention, you know, Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow. So Ryan Tannehill is a good player. There's a lot of good quarterbacks in this AFC, and it's nice to have one of the best in the conference. DK says, after last season's playoff loss, Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott both discussed how much the playoff game was a microcosm of the entire season. I believe that the same thing can be said from Saturday, even though we won. I believe two deficiencies really surfaced. One, the pass rush is limited, and we need a more dynamic rush from somewhere in the front seven, preferably defensive end. Number two, the Moss injury and their overall performance indicates that the running backs are very average. That combined with Moss's injury makes this a position to address as well. I'm with you on number two. Number one, I think the Bills' pass rush was much better than most people give it credit for this year. In just about every metric that you can find when it comes to pass rush win rate or pressures or grading pass rush, I mean, the Bills as a team collectively are very good. I think in ESPN's pass rush win rate, they were number two in the NFL in wins in under 2.5 seconds. So it's not as bad as people think it is. And I think the expectations of having the most expensive defensive line in football makes you think that, you know, they should be sacking quarterbacks left and right. Now, they're not that, but they get good pressure. I think it can be better, and we'll talk about that in the offseason, about ways that they can get better at pass rush and what A.J. Epenesa's ceiling is and what the Bills should do with Jerry Hughes and Mario Addison. But right now, this is the cast of characters, and this is as good as it's going to be. But let's keep in mind, we're frustrated after that Colts game, but that's the best pass-blocking offensive line in football. Phillip Rivers was 32nd in the NFL when it comes to how frequently he is pressured. He was only pressured on like 15.2% of his dropbacks this year. That's so, so low. Most teams are 25, 30%. So there's some context there that we have to remember. So I wish the Bills pressured Rivers more, and they'll need to against some of these quarterbacks coming up. But I think that the combination of an offense that gets the ball out of the hands of the quarterback very quickly, a quarterback like Phillip Rivers, who's played the game for 100 years and has seen every defense known to man, and the fact that they have a great pass-blocking offensive line contributed to the Bills not having a very effective pass rush, just like nobody has against the Colts this year. Tommy Boy says, I just want to say I was confident prior to the game, then I started to have childhood flashbacks. My reason for writing is I did not know how much sports trauma I was carrying until I felt the relief of a Bills playoff win. It was like a weight was lifted off my shoulders. You know, I think that's been the fun part of this year. The Bills are 13-3, number two seed in the playoffs. They've won a playoff game. They won the division. It's a good football team. There's no doubt about it. They left no doubt about how good of a football team this is. And we're not used to that. We've not had a team like this. And so I think just as much as the Bills have evolved as a team and they're a good team, we have to learn how to evolve as fans and learn what it's like to root for a good football team. It's different and it's fun and we love it, but it is an adjustment. And you're right. I think everyone was very similar to the way you were feeling there, Tommy Boy, where you feel confident, but as things progress in a game and not everything's going your way and things are tough, you start to just wonder, how are they going to blow it, right? How is this going to end in massive heartbreak, especially after the fumble, right? That was just the next thing that you were going to put on the list of Buffalo sports nightmares. I think the fact that didn't change the game, right? They responded to that. Think about the way they responded to the Hail Mary. Seven in a row now, right? Big time margins of victory. Winning in the playoffs. Then you have a critical situation like this where that call was egregious, didn't go your way. How did they respond? Perfectly. They ended the game with the win. They didn't let that affect them. They played the next play and came away with the dub. And so I think as we gain confidence in this team and we start to see what they're capable of even more, I think it'll be a lot easier to not hold our breath so often and let the goodness of this team take care of itself. Scotty says at the start of the season, you mentioned a successful season would be winning the division and a playoff game. Check and check. Have things changed based on how the season has went? You know, I think I heard Greg Thompson, Greg and Aaron on the Cover One Buffalo podcast. They were reflecting on the Colts and Bills game like they do after every game. They do the live show, and I love watching it. Make sure you check those guys out. I think they said something along the lines of, you know, their expectation was very similar to mine, and that would be a successful season. And now anything after this is house money, right? They're playing with house money. So it's just an added benefit and bonus to, you know, what could happen this year. I do maintain that winning the division and winning a playoff game means this season is a success. But I'm hungry for more, right? I think we know how good this team is. And is anybody ready for this to be over with? I don't think so. At the same time, you're balancing this truth that only one team gets to win the Super Bowl. And for 31 other teams, it ends in disappointment. Whether you don't make the playoffs, whether you lose in the playoffs, whether you lose in the Super Bowl, it ends in disappointment if you don't win it all. And so I think we can simultaneously say this has been a successful season. It's not Super Bowl or bust. But whenever it's over, if it's not winning the Super Bowl, there's going to be some level of disappointment. We're not going to feel better. If the Bills lose on Saturday, it's still going to suck. If the Bills lose in the AFC Championship game, it's still going to suck. If the Bills lose in the Super Bowl, it's going to suck. And that's just the reality. But yes, the season has been a success in my view. Goodness gracious, you got a Josh Allen developed into an MVP candidate quarterback. Stephon Diggs leading the league in receiving. He scored 501 points. Won the division. Won a playoff game. 13-3. This is dreamland stuff. Next one comes from Ryan, which is similar to a lot of other submissions. It was about John Brown. And Ryan said, John Brown didn't look like himself against the Colts. Two balls went right through his hands. Smoke is usually clutch, and we know that he and Josh have a connection. Is it still him being rusty, or do you think that Josh just had too much heat on some of those passes for any normal human being to reel them in? I would be more concerned about John Brown's performance against the Colts if the Miami game in Week 17 didn't happen. Four catches, four targets, one deep down the field. I mean, John Brown looked great against Miami. I think it's just a matter of a good player having a down game. And, you know, Cole Beasley's catching everything. Gabriel Davis was involved. Stephon Diggs was a major factor. You're getting the ball to your running backs out of the backfield more than you normally do. I think John Brown was just kind of the odd man out. And, of course, when you have drops, you know, you're going to get down. You're going to go down the pecking order. So I'm not going to push the panic button yet. And I think a lot of that stems from the context of the Indy game and, of course, how good John Brown was against Miami. Vin says, I have more of a statement today. I keep hearing a lot of people nervous about facing the Ravens. My thoughts are that this is the playoffs. It is supposed to be difficult. I'm not excited about the matchup, but I know this. Buffalo has the better quarterback. They finished with a better overall record, and I believe they are the better team. Baltimore needs to find a way to stop Josh Allen in this offense. Baltimore needs to find a way to outscore Buffalo. Let's go. Well said, Vin. They got a lot to deal with, too. Be a good football game here on Saturday night. Last one comes from Edgar. I really like this question and the talking points that we can get into as a result of it. Edgar says, a friend of mine asked for my advice on who he should bet on in the Steelers and Browns game. First, I told him that he should go in favor of the Browns, but after the last COVID cases, and especially because of the head coach not being available, I told him to change the pick and go for the Steelers. Well, the Steelers got beat. This makes me wonder, does not having your head coach on the sideline, plus not having your line coaches and your starting guard, make a really big difference? Something like this happened to the Bills. Do you think they could overcome it? So let's talk about this. What if Sean McDermott got COVID and he wasn't available to coach in a game? Some thoughts. Number one, Sean McDermott is the CEO of the Buffalo Bills. He's not a guy like a Sean McVay or a Matt LaFleur or a Cliff Kingsbury or, you know, one of those guys where their presence is critical to the play calling of the game. Sean McDermott's a leader. He's a CEO. So your play calling is unaffected by Sean McDermott's availability. You still have Brian Daboll. You still have Leslie Frazier. Oh, by the way, Leslie Frazier, a former NFL head coach that has navigated the waters of being a head coach, and Brian Daboll is a very hot head coaching candidate. You also have an X factor in my mind, and that Mark Lubick exists, and he is the game management coach. And so a lot of what Sean McDermott does is trusting Lubick to give him the right intel to make the right decision. So Mark Lubick just talks to Leslie Frazier in these situations. So not having Sean McDermott would not be good. That's not a good thing. It's never preferred. It would be bad. But because you have coordinators that call plays, because you have a game management coach, because you have another coach on your roster, your assistant head coach, Leslie Frazier, has been an NFL head coach, and Brian Daboll is about to be one, you like to think that this team is set up quite well to be able to handle a situation where Coach McDermott were to be unavailable. All right, folks, that's going to do it for us today here on the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Tomorrow is the comprehensive primer on the Baltimore Ravens. I can't wait to break that team down for you, share all my thoughts, and try to plot the plan for the Bills to have a win against the Ravens and what they need to do. So don't miss that. Make sure that you're subscribed. On Thursday, we've got a crossover preview. Friday, banged up Bills on the injury stuff. I'll give you my predictions and some leftover thoughts, which I'm pretty excited about digging into this week as I have some unique ideas for this Ravens matchup. So again, I kindly ask that you share, subscribe, rate, and review the podcast, and I look forward to catching up with you again tomorrow.